James Harden was finally traded to the Clippers. Jake Fisher joins me as we talk about all the ramifications. What does it mean for the Clippers? What does it mean for Harden? What does it mean for the 76ers as they try to replace him with another superstar? And finally, what does it mean for Joel Embiid, his present and his future? That's coming up on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports, Ball Don't Lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are also on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. This is an emergency episode, which means my guy Jake Fisher is joining me this morning. Jake, we were not supposed to be convening today, but James Harden got moved. James Harden got traded to the Clippers for a package of players and picks, or let's just say James Harden and P.J. Tucker get moved for Robert Covington, Nicholas Batum, Marcus Morris, K.J. Martin, an unprotected 2028 first-round pick, 2 second-round picks, a first-round pick from the Thunder, and a first-round pick swap. So does bullying work? Because that's kind of what this is, emotional bullying, player empowerment, whatever you want to call that. It's a lot going on here.
It's a lot going on here. You could say bullying worked in this instance. James Harden picked up his $36 million player option. The entire league, from rival executives to agents to front office people to people at the players union, were all kind of shaking their heads and holding up their arms and saying, if you wanted to go to the Clippers so badly, why'd you opt in? Why don't you opt out, take a minimum salary, and go to LA? And look who's laughing now. Like, I think Harden's side and his representation got a lot of flack from around the league for the way they handled this. I did not think that they had the leverage that they seemed to think they had. And look, we're only 3 games into the year. James Harden didn't hold out for, you know, months and months and months. This is not February. This is not December 15th. This is October 31st, a Halloween Harden trade where he does get his salary he wants. He gets to the team he wants. And I mean, yeah, that's kind of a strong arm. That's kind of a bully in an era where maybe, you know, we were starting to think that players were having less influence and less opportunity to be able to point their shot. Damian Lillard doesn't go to Miami. Donovan Mitchell before him doesn't go to New York, ends up in Cleveland. I mean, Kyrie Irving didn't necessarily want to go to Dallas, but like that was the one spot that was available to him. He wanted to go to Lakers. Everyone kind of knew that. So James Harden puts his finger on the map, says, give me LA, and now he's there.
Well, what this says to me is being a good employee doesn't count for anything, right? Because Damian Lillard was a great employee for the Portland Trail Blazers for a number of years and was the good soldier. And when he went in there and said, get me out of here and this is where I want to go, most people expected for him to be a member of the Miami Heat because of all the years of being a good employee. Most of us believed that James Harden, because of, I think this is his fourth team in 22 months or something to that effect, from Houston to Brooklyn to Philly to now to L.A. Up, down, that's literally what he's doing, right?
He got traded to Brooklyn January 2021.
So, yeah, James Harden quit his job well before he got traded, right? He quit his job in the preseason. He let us know in the summer he planned on quitting his job.
Yeah, he was not quiet quitting. He was not quiet about it.
No. He left the relationship. He left the relationship. He took his furniture. He dropped off his key. He packed up his clothes. He said, I'm out. And for whatever reason, Daryl Morey in Philly was like, no, you know, baby, come back. Please, baby, baby, please, baby, please, baby, please. All that stuff. No. And it is over. And sometimes when a relationship is over, it is over. And this relationship had been over for a long time, except Daryl Morey was the one that didn't know. And from everything that I've been told, this was not a package trade that Daryl Morey wanted. This was a trade that was made essentially by the Philadelphia 76ers ownership, that they had told Daryl Morey, get a deal done now. Whatever you can extract, whatever you can get a deal done now. And that's what he got. And I don't know if Daryl Morey can turn the package of players, more so the picks, because I don't know if the players will be as desirable on the back end. Nick Batum has already said that he's going to retire after this season. Who knows what the league thinks of Marcus Morris? Robert Covington can maybe be a valuable wing defender. Okay, but the picks are going to be what's attractive to other teams. But I don't know what this means in the meantime. So, Jake, you tell me, what does this mean for Joel Embiid and his future in Philadelphia?
It's a good question, because that's what this all really matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are the Sixers going to be closer to contending at some point this season based off of what they got back from LA in order to support him as the reigning MVP, to compete for a title, and to keep him happy so that he's not the next guy asking out? And the way they do that right now, to your point, the retrade, I mean, we just interrupted our recording for me to take a phone call from Philly side of things. And one of the things I was just told was that, you know, the retrade value of Covington, Batum, and Morris, who's to say, plus those picks, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of an undetermined, just like the Jrue Holiday stuff left an undetermined grade for the Damian Lillard return until that ultimately brought back two more picks and Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams. The Sixers are going to be looking for another player. Now, will that happen before the trade deadline? I don't know. I mean, they're going to definitely look, but will they actually get it? I don't know, because the biggest thing about those players we just named from the Sixers side of things right now, for Covington, for Batum, for Marcus Morris, even KJ Martin, they're all expiring contracts. They did not take back any future money. And that was very important to Philly all along throughout this. So I never expected to see a Norm Powell coming back. Even someone like Terrence Mann, where, you know, the whole internet was talking about the Clippers won't trade Terrence Mann for James Harden. It was never about Terrence Mann. The Sixers only knew that the Clippers offered Terrence Mann for Jrue Holiday to Portland. And they thought, well, if you're offering him for Jrue, why aren't you offering him for James? Because the Sixers, they just wanted stuff back, whether it was Mann or whether it was the second first round pick that they did end up getting from the Clippers by way of OKC. I'm being told that the 2026 pick is going to be the lesser of the three picks that the Thunder own for 2026, which is the Clippers pick, the Rockets pick, and the Thunder pick, which the Rockets pick, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is from the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade that now, you know, this is now the third time that James Harden and Russell Westbrook are teaming up. Let's not forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
But to bring it back to task, because I'm saying a lot of stuff right now, the Sixers have three more picks to trade with now, with two picks from this deal, plus an additional pick swap from the Clippers, that they can maybe go and get somebody. But they also are acting like this is a team that's going to potentially have the greatest amount of cap space next offseason. So to bring it back to Joel Embiid, will him and Tyrese Maxey be able to two-man game their way up the Eastern Conference ladder? You don't seem very confident in that. You seem pretty steadfast in that the Bucks and the Celtics are still much higher and above the Sixers in the Eastern Conference hierarchy. But
Am I wrong?
Right now, no. But then again, like, we don't know how good that tandem can be under first year head coach with this team. We don't exactly know what, you know, injuries are turned on in this NBA 2K season. Like, we don't know what's going to happen for any of these teams. You know, by the end of the day, I think, like, the Sixers under Daryl Morey, throughout Daryl Morey's tenure in Philly, throughout his tenure in Houston, the goal is always just to have a shot at winning it, because you look at the 2019 Raptors, you could be a little bit of a bounce of a ball there, a Kevin Durant injury here. All of a sudden you're hoisting that thing and you go down in the history books. So the Sixers are definitely gambling that this draft capital or the cap space that they have next summer will be able to further boost Joel Embiid's championship ceiling. But to your question, Vinny, to finally end rambling here, I'm so interested in if that, like, does that trade happen now to keep, you know, he's the reigning MVP. This is another year in his prime. Can you really wait to use that cap space until this summer? Or do you need to use that cap space now to take in a long-term contract or something that can ultimately help you win this season.
It's interesting that the 76ers are talking about cap space. I think Tobias Harris is coming off this year.
Yes.
But the problem for me with that is the more punitive luxury tax mechanisms that are coming into the CBA, that they're being sort of gradually coming in, that's why you saw the Phoenix Suns make the move for Bradley Beal. That's why you're seeing the Clippers doing what they're doing for James Harden right now. The 76ers are seeming to go in the other direction where they're saying cap space is king. Okay, fine. Daryl, you're the smartest man in the room. All right, let's see you be smart, okay? I'm very curious to see how this works. Encircling, the Sharks circling that arena in Philadelphia. You know who those Sharks are? That's Leon Rose and World Wide West, right? That's who's circling that arena in Philadelphia, saying, Joel Embiid, if you want to get out, we've got a place for you. And if you're the 76ers, can you afford to waste another year? Not even waste another year. Can you afford, because of Joel Embiid's knees and his back, how long will he be at an MVP level? How long will his patience run while he's there for that franchise? And you say a bounce here, a bounce there for the 76ers. You're absolutely right. So many things have to go right. So many things have to go right for them to even make the conference finals. Let's be perfectly honest here. You've got to get a break against the Miami Heat, a break against the Boston Celtics, a break against the Milwaukee Bucks, and hope that one of those two teams knocks each other silly before they get to you and that you're actually there. Like, a lot of things have to go right. I'm not sure if it's necessarily sustainable, Jake. I just feel like it's one of those weird things where we're looking up at Joel Embiid and we're saying, not that he needs a superstar, because he's played with superstar talent. Like, James Harden had a really good year last year, and we're not willing to actually say it out loud because of all the things, right? All the things that comes with James Harden, you know, the disappearing acts, the meltdowns, and everything else. Joel Embiid has had some borderline meltdowns too. So he needs a specific type of player to be next to him. He needs a, lack of a better phrase, a guy willing to take and make big shots, but so he doesn't have to.
I was just going to say, does he need the Damian Lillard to Giannis's, you know, yes, Robin Batman situation? I mean, yes, he had it basically in Jimmy Butler, and that only got so far with the tug and pull between Jimmy and Ben wanting to tug and war for the perimeter, you know, ball handling that you're talking about. I don't know who that player would be. That's theoretically, it's not Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine would happily take those shots. He will happily put up 51 in a losing effort. He will catch the rock and he will square up and he'll take two dribbles and fade away on the baseline and he'll look pretty doing it. But like, he's the biggest name I can think of that is like a bucket getter that is in theory out there right now. The other names that people are looking at, to your point, are Joel Embiid. It's, you know, will Karl Anthony Towns survive the Rudy Gobert clunky fit in Minnesota? I don't think Atlanta right now has any plans on giving up on Trae Young. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't really an obvious answer to a bucket getter, someone who's proven it in the postseason, that is going to be coming available anytime soon, which is kind of why I am so curious to see how this ultimate outcome, you know, unfolds, being that, you know, look at this time last year, no one thought Kyrie Irving was going to become available before the trade deadline. So the Sixers are taking that gamble. They were taking that gamble before talks, you know, reemerged over the weekend between the Clippers and the Sixers that would happen altogether. So now they're just in that same boat, except they don't have Harden. They now have a much more fungible collection of things. It's, you could look at the players as a poo-poo platter, but I do think that the picks they got back, plus the swap, plus they got 2 seconds. I think the Sixers are in a better place right now to go get, regardless of what you think of whether the value for Harden is good or not, I think mm-hmm. it's pretty objectively clear that the Sixers' war chest is far more flexible and versatile and more appealing to go and get another player that can move that ceiling higher as they were yesterday when James Harden was still on the roster, because James Harden only wanted to play for the Clippers. There was really never any team that had significant, serious conversations to go out and acquire him from Philadelphia outside of the Clippers, because James Harden wanted to go to the Clippers, and no team was really going to trade for him without knowing they'd be able to sign him long-term afterwards, because you can't negotiate him and extend him now. Like, the Clippers won't even be able to do that. The Clippers are taking a massive gamble. If you want to switch it to LA side of things, the Clippers are taking a massive, massive, massive gamble that James Harden, the last year of his contract, who is certainly looking for a big payday that he turned down from Brooklyn that he never got from Philly, will be able to move this Kawhi Leonard, Paul George pairing further into playoffs that they ever have gone before, the championship, and that everyone will be happy and healthy and successful and want to re-up coming into the 2024-2025 season when the Clippers are opening a brand new stadium full of toilets that Steve Ballmer has yelled about time and again. So it's a huge gamble. As much as you can talk about the Philly side of it all, and we don't know what they're going to be able to get, and the stakes of Joel Embiid, like, the Clippers have their draft capital out the door now till 2029. Yep. And all these guys, you know, Kawhi and Paul George both have player options for next season, so they're not as, you know, expiring and definite free agents as James Harden's going to be. But that is a total, total question mark, total gamble. And the Clippers might even have more at stake than Philly does here.
The Clippers certainly do, because of all those reasons. Because we're looking at year, what, five of this experiment.
2019.
Since they've gotten Kawhi and PG, and we've believed from that moment, okay, they are a legit organization. This is the one thing I will say. Before 2019, people thought of the Clippers as the joke organization. Even when they had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and all those guys, they were still looked at as second-tier type of team. Now they're actually respected as an organization. They may not be thought of in the same way as the Lakers and Celtics and NBA royalty, but they're no longer the clown franchise, right? They're not the New Jersey Nets, so to speak. Not Brooklyn Nets. They're not the New Jersey Nets. They're not the clown franchise in the top city. So, with that said, James Harden can now be the third option or fourth option, depending on where he fits with Russell Westbrook and how that works on a night-to-night basis. I think if he embraces this, now granted, I will fall on the sword and I will tell you that I thought the Russell Westbrook thing in LA would work to some level, because I thought, hey, LeBron and AD are going to miss games. Russ is not. Russ is going to be able to power an entire offense because he's going to play minutes, he's going to play games, he's going to eat them up like Pac-Man, and when those guys come back, he can settle into a third option. That did not happen, right? I'm using the same logic here. I'm saying if Kawhi and PG are going to miss games, not because they don't want to play, but because they're injury prone, if they're going to miss games, James Harden is at least a player that we know has played 38 minutes a night throughout his career. He has played 82 games plenty of times. He's a guy that's going to show up. Last year, he led the league in assists. And there were small stretches last year, very small stretches last year, maybe 10, 15 games, where James Harden looked like the old James Harden, except he just retrofit his game around Joel Embiid. If he's a guy that can retrofit his game again to some level around Kawhi and around PG, where those guys are taking up the usage and he's taking up the playmaking, all right, cool, this can work. And you have size along the perimeter. You have switchable players along the perimeter. You have Russ, who's not necessarily the tallest guy, but he's quick. And then you do have a guy in Ty Lue who is, he's one of those wizards on the sidelines. Like, I think Ty Lue is a master at, just lack of a better phrase, y'all, he just tries shit, okay? That's what he does. He just says, you know what? I'll try some stuff and we'll see if it works. And I don't think that he's necessarily against getting a guy like James Harden. And you know he's not afraid to coach him. Now, will James Harden embrace being coached? Will James Harden embrace playing there? Because guys can say, man, it would be great playing together. It's great to play with Kawhi. It's great to play with PG. Those guys have had conversations all summer about the possibility. But does your fantasy actually match up with the reality of what this looks like? Everybody thinks it'd be cool playing next to each other because they're thinking that guy's going to make the sacrifice. Or they think if I have to make a sacrifice, it'll be fine for me to do it until it's game 10 and you're tired of making sacrifices. And James Harden wants to play a certain way. The upside to that is this. If he's your third best player, Jake, I don't have to worry about if I'm the Clippers, if I'm Ty Lue, I don't have to worry about him having a meltdown in the playoffs. Because guess what? If you don't have PG and Kawhi, you're cooked anyway. If you have those two guys, you have a chance. It's like, oh, you can't depend on James Harden. You've seen his playoff meltdowns. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right on that front. But if you don't have either one of those guys, you're cooked anyway. James Harden wouldn't be taking up that extra slack, and neither would Russell Westbrook. In this Western Conference, where these guys in their individually in their career and where this Clippers franchise is, they need PG and Kawhi to be healthy. What James Harden is going to do is help them through the regular season.
Yeah.
I'm thinking this is more of a regular season move to get you to the playoffs, a regular season move that says we are serious about the regular season, because the past few years we've said, they've told us, we'll be ready for the playoffs. We'll be ready for the playoffs. And the playoffs come, and they haven't necessarily been ready. Now they're saying we're taking the regular season seriously, and we, as long as we get to the playoffs. Now they're saying let's get a top four seed. They've been blowing teams out the first few games of this year. 30-point leads, 40-point leads. I don't think that's anything to sneeze at. I think that's a serious approach. Even in the first week and a half of the season, I think that's a serious approach that we cannot overlook. And now you add an ultimate regular season player in James Harden, and you're limiting or lessening the dependency on him in the postseason. I think that's a positive for the Clippers.
Yeah, I don't think it's entirely a regular season move, but that's probably where the greatest benefit will come, especially if you want to talk about the injuries that the Clippers have been hampered by. It's the same situation to me, or not the same, but similar with Chris Paul and Golden State. Like, Chris Paul going to Golden State and the fact that he's not going to be, I mean, he's still doing point guard things. He's still got an incredible assist to turnover ratio and he's setting the table and all that. But like, he's not going to be asked to take the ball up every single play and run high pick and roll and run high pick and roll and run high pick and roll. So going to Golden State and being a complimentary piece, you know, we'll see about the financials with him long-term after his contract becomes non-guaranteed next season. But for now, like, just thinking about him being a member of Golden State in his 30s, it will probably have the potential to extend his career from a minutes and miles standpoint. The same thing you got to think about with the Clippers, because Harden, in theory, will be able to table set and organize things for Kawhi and Paul George to the point where they don't have to necessarily work as hard to get theirs. You know, that it's not exactly the same gamble that Phoenix is making with Bradley Beal and Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, right, and that right. They're not going to need a point guard because they're all so good on the ball. James Harden is a point guard. He's been a point guard for a decade. Mike D'Antoni turned him into a point guard. He's been a point guard ever since. And he led the league in assists last year. He was nearly an all-star. He was nearly all NBA. The dude can still play. He can still put up 40 twice in a playoff series and then also flop and have
But
the
here's
entire,
the thing. If he puts up a 40-point game, not to interrupt you, if he puts up a 40-point game in the playoffs as your third best player,
that's what I was going
you
to.
You are cooking with grease, baby. Exactly. And that way, if he has those single-digit performances, that doesn't hurt you as much because you got Paul and you've got Kawhi. To me, this all comes back to those guys. Like, he's going to settle into a position. Yeah, he's going home in L.A. and everything else. So there's going to be a certain amount of pressure. Him and Russell Westbrook, they're going to be playing together again. We're going to see how this works where neither one of them are in charge. I'm very curious to see how that works where it's neither one of those guys' teams. And that factors into a lot. I think that factored in a lot in how they played in Houston and why it necessarily didn't work. But now neither of those guys has home court advantage. It ain't their team. They have to fit into a team construct. But to my point, your third best player, you don't need him as much. If your third best player gets you a game, you win the series. If your third best player doesn't win you a game, you're still in the series. If your second best player loses you a game, you lose the series. That's the difference between James Harden being in Philly and James Harden being with the Clippers. The dependency is lessened, man.
He was always going to be number two in Philly. You know, Maxey's emergence right now.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern Conference Player of the Week. It's great. And you can look at and say, all right, that gave the Sixers more fuel to the fire to put Harden in this, or to move Harden, blah, blah, blah. It's not so cut and dry, but like Maxey would not have become this version of himself with Harden dominating the ball. That is cut and dry. And so that's a benefit from the Philly side of things. But also, like, to your point, if you reimagine James Harden as that third option, which he wasn't really in Brooklyn either. He flashed back to when he got to the Nets. I remember I was trying to pitch a book at the time. So I was really focused on his very first game. And his very first play of his very first game with the Brooklyn Nets, he passed. He had a little shimmy moment on the perimeter. He could have taken a jumper, but he swung it over to Kyrie or KD. I forget who it was on the wing. Harden will be deferential. He will table set and splay the ball around and feed those guys. He will also be happy to watch Russell Westbrook grab a rebound, run in transition, and he can slowly mosey his way on up the court and maybe get kicked back to him for a trail three. Like, I do think this situation is a little bit more ideal for him to be maximized while also for him to maximize the others around him, especially now. I mean, he's out of that weird, clunky pick and roll marriage with Embiid. I think the fact that Maxey and Embiid have had all the success off of DHO stuff, where we first saw Embiid do that with J.J. Redick back in the day, back before the, you know, bounce of the ball and the 2019 Toronto Raptors stuff. That, you know, that was where Embiid thrived the most in screen action. And from the second James Harden got traded to Philly, coaches who work with Embiid, coaches who work with Harden, everyone was kind of rolling their eyes and looking at things and being like, this is not a match made in heaven. Joel does not like to roll, and even he likes to roll to whichever opposite way is a left-handed pocket pass that Harden likes. I can't do my brain. I have a little bit of brain fog right now, but the fit was never ideal. And now Harden goes to a situation where he's either, you know, Ivica Zubac is not Clint Capela, but he is a role man. He is 100% a role man. And the Clippers, something I'll probably write a little bit about more on yahoosports.com coming up. Tyronn Lue, the wizard that you talked about, part of his wizardry, he was wanting and clamoring for more versatile big men from a defensive side of things. Last season, the Clippers go out and get Mason Plumlee from, I believe it was Charlotte, if I recall correctly. He's not like the answer there, though. And PJ Tucker won't be either. Like, I see my Sixers fan friends kind of laughing at the people online who are looking at the inclusion of PJ Tucker for the Clippers as this massive ancillary piece. It's definitely more of a salary dump for Philly, I think, than for the Clippers adding a piece. But that being said, PJ Tucker will be a valuable weapon at some point in time to throw at somebody to be just another more of a switchable, versatile, quote-unquote big man, even though he's only 6'4" or 6'5" or whatever he is, that I believe, from what I've heard in the past, Ty Lue will be very eager to add to his arsenal when Zubac is not exactly an optimal fit for whatever, you know, lineup they're going against. So you've got Harden playing with the starting center, who is a traditional role man, and then you've got a versatile backup five who Harden has plenty of experience with, who will also bolster Tyronn Lue's depth at bringing off different looks to fill that five spot. I do think the Clippers are better today than where they were yesterday. So I mean, I just think overall, like, I think all sides win this trade. I maybe that will be wrong when the dust settles, but right now, like, my gut check reaction, looking at all this, understanding where the talks were, you know, incrementally along the way, I think the Clippers get better. I think the Sixers get a better package to be able to go get that third star, like we were talking about earlier. And the Thunder, based off of what we know, the Thunder basically got an extra crack at a lottery ticket with a 2027 pick swap from the Clippers just to protect the 2026 pick they already had from the Clippers and send an additional pick to Philly, which, you know, maybe is not going to be that valuable anyhow. So I think it's a great get for all sides and just a matter of seeing the fit come together and seeing what Philly will ultimately turn all that stuff into.
Yeah, Philly's a to be continued, and the Clippers are in a show and prove situation. But that, my friends, is Jake Fisher. You're going to read him on Yahoo Sports. You can read me on Yahoo Sports. We both have reactions to the trade from different angles. You will see it whenever you check into the website or the trusty Yahoo Sports app. If you did not listen to my podcast the other day with former Knicks GM and current ESPN analyst Scott Perry, that is available. And Dan Devine spoke with ESPN's Zach Lowe on Divine Intervention. Don't forget to go back and listen to those. Jake will be back with Dan for an episode of No Cap Room on Thursday. Thanks to producer John behind the glass, Evan and Ron who do the videos. Everybody, until next week, where there's another trade. who knows what's going to happen in this wacky NBA. But until then, everybody be safe.